They're personal to Nate and to me. A year ago, when we walked into the study of 1 Corinthians and we outlined it all, we had no idea how important these verses would be to the life of our community and our church right here at Valley Brook at this very point. We had no idea how much they would reveal to us about who we are as a church family and what we're really called to be. So today, I don't want you to think of it as a teaching. It'd be better to think of it more as a family talk. How's that? Family talk. If you're new to Valley Brook, this isn't normally what Sunday looks like, but we're confident that God's going to speak to you today from His Word, from the things that He's given us to share, and from seeing our family, because Valley Brook Family Talk days are the days when clarity comes and healing flows. So we're just really excited to go there. And we're going to let Paul lead the way here in 1 Corinthians. Paul really ends his letter to the Corinthians like a family chat here anyway. All the theology is gone, and it's just open-hearted, and it's practical in chapter 16. Because at the beginning of this chapter, Paul calls out their selfishness. Selfishness. So we're going to look at the selfishness of the Corinthians today in verses 1 through 14. But to set the stage and go first, we're going to start right here with the two of us. Because the truth is, God has been rooting selfishness out of both Nate and me in a big way over the past year. And He's been using our relationship together to do that. So this morning, I want to tell you a story. It's a personal story. It's really holy, sacred ground for us to walk on. And there are some humorous parts along the way, so feel free to laugh. But this story has profoundly changed our lives. It's profoundly changed our families too. And over the course of the next little bit, I think it's going to explain to you a lot of what's been happening in our church over the last few months too. Here's where the story begins. Spring of 2012. On my morning drive to church, Jesus spoke to me really clearly. And He asked me a question. Doug, can I do anything I want to with Valley Brook Church? That startled me. Kind of scared me too. Because I've been really clear with God about my heart all along the way. God, I want to obey You, whatever You want. So I know if Jesus is asking me a question like that, that it's going to be a big step of obedience for me. And of course, in the process, my answer is yeah. Because I knew whatever Jesus had in store with this kind of question, okay, this is going to be really hard, but it's going to be really good too, because that's just who God is. I just didn't get how personal this was going to be. So a little while after that, one night Jesus got me out of bed. He had me get my Bible, took me downstairs, and He told me something that I was not prepared to hear. He had me open my Bible to 1 Samuel chapter 20, to the story of how God knit Jonathan and David's hearts together as one, and then He told me, that's what I'm about to do with you, Doug. I'm going to knit your heart to the heart of another person, and that person is Nate Hagedorn. I was stunned.
You were stunned?
Yeah. You weren't in the room. You didn't get to be stunned. I never thought that God would do something like that today. I had never considered it. I mean, You could have knocked me over with a feather that night. What did it mean? And Nate Hagedorn? I mean, right?
I was a joke right. Of a mess. Yeah.
I mean, God, if You're going to knit me together with somebody, can I please have Grant Schultz? Right? I mean, no offense to Nate, but kind of. Because, I mean...
Yeah. None taken.
Okay. I love this guy, but not enough to have him permanently knit to my heart, because I know the story of Jonathan and David. There's no break from their knittedness until Jonathan dies. I hope you're Jonathan, right? Okay. So I'm doing a double check here. I'm not on prescription drugs, and I didn't eat pizza before I went to bed. All right? But I'm thinking, like, okay, I must be making this up until the next night. God wakes me up, takes me downstairs, and the same thing happens. Now, you have to know, God has talked to me a lot in my life, but never has He got me up two successive nights in a row. So I knew He really meant business. And I knew he really wanted me to know that it was him. So I said, yes, Jesus, if this is what you want, I'm in. But can I tell you, this kind of sounds weird to me. And could you please tell Nate? Because I think his life just got ruined. And I don't want to be the one to tell him. But I guess the story of Jonathan and David being knit together is a story of brotherly love. So how bad could this be? Bad. A lot worse than I thought. How do you know, for instance, in this story, that God has really knit your heart to the heart of another person? You know how you know? On the days that you don't want it. On the days that you want to get away from the other person at all costs. On the days that you want it to be over, but it's not. Those are the days you know. Because you can physically distance yourself and you can not talk to each other all day long. And then you can still feel that knitting on your heart on the inside, and it's like your whole life is cursed until you repent and start loving the other person that you're called to love again. So we've had a few of those days over the last 10 months. People ever talk to you about the story of Jonathan and David in the Bible and they smile? Don't believe them. They have no idea what they're talking about, okay? Because having your heart knit to another person by God means that you have to share everything. I'm an only child. I don't share. I'm not wired like that. And suddenly God is telling me that I have to share, that I am called to share everything in my life with this guy. My calling, my ministry, my schedule, my office, my money, my food, my time. Anybody notice a key word there? My. Yeah. I had no idea how selfish I really was. And the problem is I know Scripture way too well to pretend that I don't get what's going on at this point. This is Acts 2, 42 through 47. It's the blueprint for the New Testament church. They shared everything they had in common every single day. And here's my problem. I never liked those verses. When we went through our study of Acts, if you'll remember, I had Matt Ness talk about those verses. I didn't like them. And now God was calling me to live those out in real time with another person every single day. And it was so hard. And just so I couldn't miss it, I remember the first Sunday that we taught. It's Sunday night. We're done. It's the first Sunday we've ever taught together. And we walk off this little jut, and we go to stand down there right now, and Grant's singing a song. And I can't sing because God is speaking in my head so loudly. You're done, Doug. You've done this alone for your entire life, but no more. I won't have it. This is what I've done. You're going to walk in it, and anything else is disobedience to me. And I'm standing there bawling because there's no room for doubt. I went home and told Robin, I think God is going to strike me dead if I don't do this thing with Nate. He is that serious. And he was that serious, all right. Because every time I started doubting, God would get me up in the middle of the night. God would send somebody to me. Something would come my way that was so blatant and so clear that I couldn't miss it or avoid it. There were days that I literally sat on the couch in our family room and cried because it felt like God was taking a jackhammer to my head with the truth. I got what I was supposed to do, but I didn't get why I was supposed to do it. Well, now I get why I was supposed to do it. Because knitting my heart to Nate's heart was God's plan to uproot all my selfishness.
I want to tell you, when Doug was talking about God, you want to tell Nate? Because I think you just ruined his life. I thought that too, right away. But not initially, because I remember sitting at Baruch's. I remember that day sitting at Baruch's with Doug, and he's like, sit down to eat lunch. I got something really serious to talk to you about. Kind of a big deal. Every time those words come out of his mouth, it's like, okay, I'm up to something bad. I'm being disobedient. I'm gonna get corrected here. And he started to tell me what God had showed him. And I took a deep breath at first, because it's like, oh, awesome, I'm not in trouble. Not even really realizing what he's telling me. And like, yeah, I mean, Doug, I can see that God spoke this to you. You're really, I mean, super emotional, super invested, talking, concentrated, focused, looking at me. And I just kind of took it as a normal conversation. Like, I see what God's showed you. I totally get the story of Jonathan and David. I understand that those guys really loved each other. I mean, that would make sense that he would do, because we've been really building a really good relationship. I know Doug loves me. I love him. He's really a mentor to me, a brother to me, someone I really look up to, and I know he knows I love him back. But this Jonathan and David thing, like, I didn't even understand the implications of what that meant. So I just took it in. Great, that's awesome, Doug. We finished our salads, and we came back to the office, and he did his thing, I did my thing. I go home. I don't even think I told Jess about it, because it didn't even register for me. It's just like, oh, awesome. We're supposed to be Jonathan and David. We're going to be really close at the office. This is going to be a really good time. Well, maybe we'll teach together sometime, or, you know, like, I'll learn a lot of stuff. And the next day, seeing the serious look on Doug's face again, knowing how seriously he takes what God tells him to do and what God shows him in obedience, and me learning how to be obedient to what God's showing me. But I agreed with Doug, and he told me again, he said, buddy, like, this is real. God's going to knit our hearts together. There's a lot in this. Like, this is, and I believed it, but I started to realize, like, for the first time, I mean, this selfishness started to brew up inside of me, started to kick in, like, oh, so if you love me, then I have to love you back. Okay, I can do that, but realizing, like, I have to lay my life down. I have to put you before me. I've never really done that before. I just started to realize this selfishness that was inside of me. Can you just love me, and then that will be it? Like, that sounds like kind of like Jonathan and David. I started to doubt. I started to, is this knitting thing even real? That's just a story. That's not really good. That can't really happen nowadays. There's no way God would do anything like that. But I knew it. And Doug was talking about how you don't even realize how knit you are to somebody until you try to get away. I could not get away. And it wasn't Doug pinning me down in his office. I couldn't get away. I could get away, but I couldn't get away inside. God kept pointing me back to Doug. God kept pointing me back to truth. I tried hard to get away. Just as much as he, Nate Hagedorn, Doug Lebsack, you're going to knit me to Doug Lebsack. I couldn't get away. And that is when you really realize that you can't get away and how knit you really are, because God has done this. Because God really did do this. I felt it inside. All this selfishness was coming out of me, but in the middle of all of that, I knew the calling. I knew this was going to be hard. I knew I wanted to kick and scream. I knew that I wanted out, but I wasn't supposed to get out because God had done this between us. And that's where I landed on. So what we've been learning, what I've been learning, is how selfish I am and how deeply rooted it is in my life. How I don't care much about anything. I've talked a pretty good game along the way in my faith journey of, it's all about love, it's all about community, it's all about relationship. Wow, when love, relationship, and community really show up, I see how much I didn't want that. I saw how much I wanted to kick and push and run away because I was scared to death of what that really meant. So this selfishness has been uprooted in my life. One thing we've been learning, the biggest thing we've been learning most recently, even in the last month, as we've been walking together into this calling that God has called us to, is how selfish people are in relationships. And this is what God's showing us. Selfishness is the root of relational sickness. So, you want to know what the problem with your marriage is? You want to know what the problem is with your relationship with your kids? Why you can't get along all the time with people at work or friends? Why a relationship is so difficult? It's because you're selfish. And it's because the people you're involved in a relationship with are selfish too. Two selfish people don't make an unselfish person or an unselfish relationship. And that's what we've been discovering, and that's what we've been seeing. No one's willing to lay down their life or their agenda for someone else. You may think you do. You may think you do in your marriage. You may think you do with your children, but you don't. It's all about you. It's all about what you want. Never about what the other person really wants, because you always have a motive or some selfish tendency that underlies it all. So if you lay down your life, you have to stop thinking about yourself. If you lay down your life and start laying down your agenda, and you have to start thinking about other people. You have to start seeing other people. You have to start caring for other people. You have to start loving other people instead of what you want or what you think you need. That's how I've lived my life. I'd never laid down my life for anyone before. All I could think about was myself, what I wanted, what was important to me, what made me feel comfortable in life. And all of a sudden now I'm knit to somebody where I have to care about them all the time. And I have to see them and I have to put them before me. And I've been failing miserably at it because I've been so selfish. That's a problem. My selfishness is a huge problem in my life. And it's played out in this relationship. So I think of the question, do you want to get well? I love that question. That question changed my life. Because I said yes to that question. And all of a sudden in my life, I walked toward healing. And I let God in, opened a door for healing to flow through me. I'm no longer trapped or held down to sin, held captive the way I was before. I'm finally free in areas of my life that I never thought I would see freedom or hope in. So that question hangs over Valley Brook Church. What I couldn't see in my life was that there's something deeper and darker than all the stuff that I was even up to, and that's selfishness. I didn't want to see selfishness. As soon as it started coming up, I started pushing it down. I don't want to see that. I don't want to have to deal with that because I really like being selfish. I really like just having it be about me, not anyone else. So it's been a very clear picture for me recently of how selfish I've been and how much I don't care about other people, but how I'm called to care about other people. So I've been kicking and screaming for the last 10 months with Doug. He says a couple times, I've been kicking up a lot against him because I am selfish. And I don't want to see him, and I don't want to love him, and I don't want to care for him. I do, that's my heart, but the selfishness takes that over like crazy. Well, I don't care about him or anyone else because all I can think about and focus on is myself. So I get why we're in it together. I didn't right away, but I get it now. It's so that God can uproot the selfishness in me because I'm completely changed and I'm starting to become a selfless man for the first time in my life. And it's different, and it's new, and I've not fully even understood it or what it's even going to mean, but I know I'm going free from my selfishness. I know I'm slowing down more. I know I can start to see Doug and love him the way he needs to be loved and cared for, and people even too, because I've missed a lot of you guys. I've missed everyone, actually, because all I've been thinking about is myself and the process. So it's rooted that much in my life, and it was rooted that much in the Corinthians too. If you look in chapter 16, now about the collection for the Lord's people. I do what I told the Galatian churches to do. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up, so that when I come, no collections will have to be made.
Okay, so you've got a contrast here between the Galatians and the Corinthians. The Galatians weren't selfish with their money, and the Corinthians were. The council in Jerusalem had a plan to care for the needs of the poor. Every church was supposed to send in an offering. It went to Jerusalem, and then the council would distribute the money as the needs arose. The Galatians know the plan, so everybody in the Galatian church, every week, they keep their money together for the poor. They bring it to the church. The church sends the money to the council, and the needs of the poor are taken care of. Nobody has to say anything in the Galatian church because their hearts aren't selfish with their money. And then in the Corinthian church, they have to talk about it all the time because everybody's selfish with their money. And the Corinthian church is by far the richer church. But it's the Galatian church that got it because their hearts weren't selfish with their money. So I think about Valley Brook. We're a giving church. As a whole, we're generous. But let's be honest, not every one of us here is generous in our hearts with our money. So we get to look at it today. I mean, you know if you're selfish with your money. You know how you respond to giving, not out of the amount, but out of the heart. So are you glad that we don't say a lot about money here at Valley Brook because it lets you off the hook and then you can just be selfish with your money and feel okay going here? Or are you glad we don't say a lot about money here at Valley Brook because you feel trusted to obey God with your money? Because being trusted is a whole lot better than being guilted. It's way better to live like the Galatians and the Corinthians. And as we start here, you might think, well, that's okay, I get it. That's kind of a small picture of selfishness, but here's the thing we've learned about selfishness. Once it takes root in your heart, it mushrooms, it snowballs, it starts to take over very large territories of your heart, and before you know it, you are living out your selfishness in really big ways, and that's what happened to the Corinthian church. Their selfishness in certain areas had become so legendary that even at the end of this letter, Paul has to call them out on it. So let's read verses 10 through 12 and see if you can find their selfishness here. He says, "When Timothy comes, see to it that he has nothing to fear while he is with you, for he is carrying on the work of the Lord just as I am. No one then should treat him with contempt. Send him on his way in peace so that he may return to me. I am expecting him along with the brothers. Now about our brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to go to you with the brothers. He was quite unwilling to go now, but he will go when he has the opportunity."
So the Corinthians weren't just selfish with their money, they were selfish with their spiritual leaders too. That's the big thing, the biggest thing that Paul's addressing here in chapter 16. Paul was sending Timothy to care for the Corinthian church, for him to be their leader, for him to walk them into the truth, to do what he was supposed to do, to do what he was called to do. But when Paul was sending Timothy to the Corinthians, he knew how selfish the Corinthians were. He knew how selfish they were with their money. He knew how selfish they were with their leadership. He knew how much they hated him, how much contempt they had for him. So he knew exactly what Timothy was walking into. And that's why he said what he said to them. Do not treat them with contempt. So you look at that, and it's like, you have nothing to fear while he is with you. Or make sure he has nothing to fear while he is with you. So Paul knew Timothy's on his way there. He's got something to fear because the Corinthians are going to chew him apart for who he is. And they're going to put contempt on him because they did the same thing for Paul. So he knows exactly what he's walking into. The Corinthians had contempt for Timothy because he wasn't fancy enough for him. He wasn't like Apollos. He was young. He wasn't an original disciple like Peter was. He wasn't trained in Greek rhetoric like Apollos was. He was short. He was bald. They just didn't like him. They didn't like him because he was called. They didn't like him because he was standing up into who he was supposed to be as a leader of the church. So you look at Paul. That was Paul. What I was talking about was Paul. I'm sorry. So you look at who Paul was called to be. He was God's appointed leader for the church, for advancing the church. Paul was great because he was called. And he knew that. That's all he knew he had. So he was educated. He knew more about the Jewish faith and the Christian faith than anyone else. Miracles and healing showed up everywhere he went. He wrote the majority of the New Testament. God's calling was all over his life. Paul was the man for the job because he was anointed and God said he was. But he wasn't good enough for the Corinthians. Paul wasn't. So Timothy, if they treated Paul like that, how do you think they were going to treat Timothy? A young man who didn't know anything, but who was called. Here's Timothy now. He's in his late 20s. His Bible training comes from his mom and his grandma, which isn't the best with what we've talked about with who women were back in the day. That's not the best training to get from your mom and your grandma, but that's where he learned the Bible. That's where he learned Scripture. He didn't have much ministry experience. He didn't have a spiritual pedigree. He just had a big heart and a big calling for the church. And that's why he was important to the church. And that's what Paul knew. So guess what the Corinthians were going to do to him? Paul says, make sure you have nothing to fear because Timothy has something to fear. Don't treat him with contempt because you're going to treat him with contempt because that's the kind of people you are. That's how you treat your leaders. They didn't want Timothy to come. They would have chewed him up and spit him out. He was an embarrassment to them as a leader. The Corinthians didn't want God's anointed person who was just Timothy and Paul. They wanted fancy. They wanted Apollos. Apollos was looked smarter. He was older. He was well-educated. He had a big vocabulary. He could really put sermons together and really just knock them out of the park. That's who they wanted. Apollos didn't want to go with him. I love that verse there. "Now about our brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to go with you with the brothers." Paul strongly urged him to go. He was quite unwilling to go, but he will go when he has the opportunity. I can just picture Apollos going, I don't want to go. No. Because he knew what he was walking into too. He knew that they wanted him for the wrong reasons. So he would have walked in and been this superstar, this preacher superstar person. He didn't want to be that. He wasn't supposed to be that. So he didn't want to go there, so he stayed back. Corinthians didn't want Timothy because Timothy grated against their pride and their selfishness. They were far too selfish to receive love and truth from a young guy with a big calling and a big heart. Because all they saw in Timothy was an uneducated young man.
Okay, family. Anybody see a parallel in these verses to our church? I do. Because over the last 8 years, I've watched some of the people at Valley Brook Church treat our Timothys like the Corinthians treated Timothy. So will you go back with me for just a minute to like when I first came here? Because if you were here when I first came here 8 years ago, I remember Matt Ness, my first couple years here. And we started to team teach together just like Nate and I do now. And some of you really loved Matt and were supportive of him, but I got an awful lot of kickback. A lot of hurtful comments about Matt. Some people here really threw contempt on our teaching together. I remember the phrase, our church has turned into the Bob and Tom show. There was little patience for us to learn how to teach together. There was little respect for Matt's development as a pastor or a leader. There was a lot of contempt for his age and his education. But it was fascinating to watch. As Matt finally got his legs underneath him, he starts KBI. He starts taking trips to Ethiopia. We start adopting Ethiopian children into our church, and the conduit of blessing really starts out of Matt's obedience. And as the fruit of this all starts to show up, suddenly Matt starts to matter to our church a lot. And Matt's really become someone here. But oddly enough, about the same time, then God tells me it's time to raise up Grant Schultz. So Grant just starts leading worship, and as he starts leading worship, I get nasty notes and emails. There's little patience for him to learn how to lead worship. But when Grant started teaching on Sundays, that's when it really hit the fan here. And some of you did not want a former porn addict teaching you the Bible. You were sure that he was going to go back into porn because real freedom wasn't possible. Or you were sure that all he was going to attract were perverts and pedophiles into our church and we'd be really unsafe here. And he had no time to learn. Right out of the gate, he's judged as boring and wordy. And then, once again, as Grant gets his feet underneath him, the tables turn. Not only does he stay free from porn, but he writes our first book, Pure for Men. And other churches want the book. And then Grant goes to speak at other churches and other ministries, and he gets really good at leading worship, and then he starts writing songs. And then he starts recording songs. And now today, everybody loves Grant Schultz. They can't wait for him to speak. They can't wait for him to teach. They can't wait for him to lead worship. He's a really awesome pastor in all these respects. Okay, anybody catching the pattern? And here we are again. And this time, it's Nate. And some of you love him, and then some of you don't because he's young and inexperienced, and he's got a big tattooed sleeve, and he's a little rough around the edges.
Just a little bit.
And not only that, but there's this big bother about his relationship with me. Why are we so close? Why do we do life together? I believe the current question that's in vogue is, what's up with Doug and Nate? And then usually that question is followed by some really inappropriate things. It breaks my heart to see how this church has treated its Timothys over the past 8 years. Now, some of you have not been like that. And I know some of you right now are like, you've got to be kidding. But this is a family talk, and we need to see how our brothers and sisters have been behaving in this. Because overall, as a church, over the past 8 years, we've looked really Corinthian when it comes to our Timothys. That's not okay. Instead of cheering me on as a lead pastor who has a heart to develop young pastors, I've taken it in the teeth for this, and so have they. Even with the fruit that's come each time, there's still no patience for the next person to get up and running. And please don't get me started on the things that you've said about our women, like Nita and Mary and Michelle, just because they're women. It hurts. Are we really that fancy that we can afford as a church to be so selfish towards our Timothys, towards our spiritual leaders? Because God keeps doing miracles in our midst. He keeps raising up some of the least likely people. People who he's freed from sin, people who he's healed from wounds. He's calling them to be pastors who love you, who lay down their lives for you, who give to you. And I would think a church like Valley Brook would want to cheer for our Timothys. Because guess what? We all have stories. We've all been forgiven for so much. We've all been given a chance to become so much more than we ever thought we could be. We call that our God-created identity. I would think our Timothys would inspire us, that they would encourage parents to show their kids, look, God has a dream for your life too. I would think that our Timothys here would be one of our greatest inheritances. Look at what God has done. And for some of you, that has been true. But for a number of you, that's not been true. And I'm praying that today, the truth would set us free, because we can't be selfish with our spiritual leaders like that. Do you see what's been happening? And as we're walking here through 1 Corinthians chapter 16, I'm going to get really open with you because I relate to Paul. Don't hear me wrong. I'm not saying I'm on Paul's level. I'm telling you I relate to his circumstances. Because the Corinthians didn't see Paul as a person. It didn't occur to them that Paul had no family, that he moved from place to place, that his relational roots were never down anywhere for very long. They treated Paul like a spiritual commodity, like a spiritual resource, something they used for their benefit. And then when Paul didn't measure up to their expectations as a person or a minister, they threw contempt on him. Okay, I felt that contempt. I know that contempt. I've been here for 8 years, but it still happens. So yes, I feel deeply. And I talk about my emotions. And I talk about my heart. And I cry on stage. And I encourage you to feel and talk about your emotions and talk about your hearts and to heal. And some of you have called that soft. Some of you have called that emotionally weak. Some of you have called that gay. And that is not okay. And I heard it again this week. So I see the contempt you have for me on a personal level because of the way God created me. And then more comes my way for some of the decisions that I've made at this church to obey God. The most contempt comes over the Timothys, over the people that God calls me to raise up here. And I get a lot of contempt for that because I raise up Timothys and I share power instead of being this big, powerful solo pastor. And now I'm watching the contempt get aimed at both Nate and me as he steps into his calling next to me, a calling where he not only shares the ministry with me here at Valley Brook Church, but relationally, personally, as in our daily lives as brothers. I'm not called to do life alone anymore. That's why we told you the story at the beginning, so you could understand that. And I'm specifically called to do life with Nate. Now, you might not get that, but Paul sure did. Because Paul wasn't called to do life alone either. When the Holy Spirit first called Paul out in Acts chapter 13, he was called out with Barnabas. Some of you can quote the verse, "Separate unto me Paul and Barnabas for the work of the ministry that I've called them to." And it was a great partnership. Paul and Barnabas went everywhere together. They did everything together until one day John Mark got in the mix and got between them. But then it's Paul and Silas. Paul is always with somebody throughout his journeys because Paul wasn't called to do it alone either. But it wasn't until Timothy came along that things got really personal for Paul. When you read about the relationship between Paul and Timothy, you quickly learn that they shared something really special in life. Because Paul did ministry with a lot of people, but Timothy was family. If you open up 1 Thessalonians and read it, you can read how close they were. Paul just glows about Timothy in that book. He calls him his true son over and over. And Paul could do that because the church in Thessalonica got it. They saw Paul as human. They knew he wasn't a spiritual resource. They knew Paul needed close relationship and that he wasn't called to lead the church alone. So they loved the fact that God had given Timothy to Paul so they could do life and ministry together. And then in contrast, you have the Corinthians, and the Corinthians don't like it. They have contempt for Paul. They have an even greater contempt for Timothy. But their contempt for Paul and Timothy doesn't stop what God had done between them. By the time the second letter to the Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, rolls around, look at who's writing the letter. 2 Corinthians 1:1. Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God, and Timothy, our brother. Paul and Timothy wrote the second letter together because they shared their calling together. And you'll notice Timothy's not pretending to be someone he's not. Paul's still called an apostle, and Timothy's just called a brother, but they're equal partners in the shared calling that they have together. Why wasn't it Paul and Apollos? Because, I mean, Apollos was slick. Or Paul and Peter. I mean, can you imagine those two, what a tandem they would make? But that wasn't God's design. It was Paul and Timothy because God said it was Paul and Timothy. And when God joins two people together for his work, that's just how it is.
So, I know my calling. And I'm called to stand right next to this guy and help him lead this church. It's kind of a bold statement from a young man, but I believe it because God has proven it and showed us time and time again what this is supposed to look like. I'm called. I didn't ask to be a Timothy. I didn't ask to be knit to Doug's heart, nor did he to mine. I'm young. I don't have credentials. I'm inexperienced. I'm learning. I screw things up. I already did this message. I'm new at all this, but I'm learning how to obey my Father and listen to his voice. And this is what he's shown me. I have to lead. I have to lead right next to Doug. I can't stand anywhere else. There's no other calling for me on this earth but that. It's very specific. It's very intentional. It's very real. And I'm alive because of it. And Doug's coming alive because of it. And there's fruit in our lives. If I walk away, I'm disobedient. If I walk away, I'm dead. I know it. So what I found out in this is that people have a very skewed picture of what leadership is really supposed to look like. So did I. Because you would look at leadership as one man standing up on the top in the power and the authority. But that's not the kingdom of God. That's not how God defines leadership. God defines leadership as servanthood. Leaders are called to lay down their lives so that everyone else can stand on their shoulders and become everything they're called to be. And God's kingdom leaders are the least, not the greatest. So Doug and I are called to be servant leaders in this church so that other pastors like Grant, Mary, Nate Obwan, Michelle, Jackie can all stand up and rise up into who they're supposed to be for this community and what they're called to. And they're called to love you guys, and they're called to lay down their lives for you guys as well. We do that so Nita can take Wounded to Europe in less than a month. So more ministry leaders, you leaders, can stand up and rise up into everything you're supposed to be. So we can all stand up and flourish and find our God-created identities and become everything that God has made us to be. That was my life here. And I've stood up and I've seen who I'm called to be. God has shown me. He keeps showing me who I'm supposed to be. I try to get rid of it. I try to walk away. I can't. Because it burns inside of me. It lives inside of me. So if you think there's a pecking order at Valley Brook Church, there's not a pecking order. Doug's not the head guy. Me and Doug aren't the head guy. We share power as a staff and as pastors. We're all equal in the kingdom. We all have our specific roles here, but we all do the same thing. And it's our call. It's our call to love, and it's our call to care for you guys and for us to lay our lives down so that you can find life. So I didn't ask to be a Timothy, but I know my call to lead this church with Doug. If I could compare my life and Doug's life to Paul and Timothy's, that's about the best picture I could think of what ministry is supposed to look like. It's the blueprint for the church. So just like Timothy was close to Paul, I'm supposed to be close with Doug. Not just on this stage, not just throughout the week. We do share our lives together. And as selfish as I've been, I'm learning what that looks like and how to share my life and my time and my resources with my big brother, because he does the very same thing for me. And that's what the church is supposed to look like. That's what the church is called to. So when God tells Doug that we're supposed to be knit together, I totally get it. Because for some reason, I don't know why, I've always understood this man. From when I walked into this place, 10 years ago, he wasn't here yet. And when he came, he was weird and he didn't fit. Which is true. You guys, it's totally true. But I felt connected to him. There's no reason I should have ever felt connected to him for how opposite we are. But we're not opposite in here. So when Doug says, Nate, God told me that he's going to knit our hearts together, I already felt like our hearts were knit together. I just had a name for it. And we had something to put it to. Because we got each other on a level that people should not get each other on, especially where we've been and where we've come from. So I totally believe God has done that. And I see the fruit. And you can ask Doug's wife and family and my wife. My kids can't tell you what's going on because they're too little. But there's fruit in our lives. And we are going free, and we are being healed from more stuff than we ever thought we'd be healed from, especially selfishness. So once I started standing next to him, and we started living out our calling and started living out who God has called us to be, I understand why I'm here. I see Doug more than I've ever seen him now before. The load he's been carrying the last 8 years at this church has been catastrophic. The load he carries is all the contempt and the hatred and the pressure. It's just added up and added up and added up and added up because he's been slaughtered like Paul's been slaughtered. He's not supposed to carry that alone. So I know why God knit my heart to his heart, because I'm supposed to help him carry the load. Because I'm equipped to help him carry the load. It's a beautiful thing, what we're called to. And God has done it, not us. We're just walking in obedience to what this looks like. Doug was a shaky person inside with all the stuff that was laid on him.
Yeah, you couldn't see that, but that was real.
He had anxiety. He's talked about that before. Super alone because no one would stand next to him. No one would understand him. No one could. They just couldn't. He was an alien to us. But God put something in me to see him. Even way back then, I didn't even know what that meant until recently, after he's knit us together. Doug doesn't look like that anymore. He's not full of anxiety. He doesn't walk around in fear. He's not all shaky anymore. Sometimes he's shaky a little bit, but he smiles a lot more these days. He's got a renewed passion and vision for this community and this church. He realized that he lost patience along the way, and his patience is coming back. He's been attacked time and time and time again, and he's had to put defenses up and put walls up. Those walls are going down. Those defenses are going down. He's approachable. He fits in this community for the first time ever because God has knit us together, and God has put us together. He gets to be a real person now because he's not ever had the permission to be one for the last 8 years. He is our brother. He fits in this community because he's supposed to. So what's up with Doug and Nate? This is what's up with Doug and Nate. God knit our hearts together. And it is unique and unusual and a little creepy.
Oh, I enjoy that.
But you guys, it's pure. And it's been hard for us. Because what is it? Can you imagine being knit to somebody else? You might think I thought I was knit to my wife. Not until I realized I was knit to him. I love my wife and she loves me and we are close. But this is different. This is God. This does not happen every day. So it's interesting even just talking about it right now. I'm like, what in the world am I talking about? This is what God has done. And we know it. And we know the fruit of what has come from all this stuff. So God has knit us together. That means we lead together. We share life together. We carry the weight of this calling, of this church together, because God has called us to. Because he's laid it down right in front of us and said, this is what I have for you guys. And this is what this is supposed to look like. As creepy or as weird or as unusual as it is, it's not. It's a biblical model of what the church is supposed to look like, especially right. Church leadership. The apostles were sent out in twos, in pairs. You don't see that in the church at all these days. You see men of power standing up on their own in this lead pastor role. That's normally what we see in church these days. No one wants to share their calling with anyone else. No one wants to do it with someone else. They take the weight upon themselves and they try to do it on their own, and that's not what it's supposed to look like. Most lead pastors tend to be really selfish when it comes to their calling. They're too proud or selfish to share it with anyone. Because people don't want to lay down their lives. They want to do it on their own. So Doug and I are living out the blueprint for the church. It's like in Acts 2, like Doug said. The 2x2. And God knit two of the most unlikely people together to live this calling out in real time. Because the church isn't supposed to be selfish.
No.
So we get to kind of be the guinea pigs of what love is really supposed to look like and what it looks like to lay down your selfishness and fully love someone the way you're supposed to love someone, because we are called to love. And if there's an ounce of selfishness in us, we are not going to love the person sitting next to us. Because all we're going to think about is what we need or what we want or what we want for us, not what the other person needs or not what the other person... Other people need to be loved. That's the only way they're going to we're going to love people. It's the only way we're going to see people is if we start thinking and caring about them instead of ourselves. It's rooted deep within inside of us. So that's what's up with Doug and Nate. We're just being obedient to what God's called us to. You're very welcome. Amen.
Thank you.
So guys, I'm really young. I'm really uneducated. I'm just like Timothy. But I'm just like Timothy in this too. I got a big heart for the church. I got a big calling that burns inside of me, and I knew it when I walked into this place 10 years ago. I had no clue I'd be sitting here talking about it like this today. But God stirred something in me when I walked into this building. The weak, pathetic little boy that I was. Like, this is for you. I did not know what that meant, but I know what that means sitting here today. I'm still learning a lot. Like I said, I still screw it up. I'm going to. I'm a human being. I get that. There are a handful of you in this room who are way more qualified than I am to be sitting here right now. But I know, but I'm called. God has marked me as a Timothy and as a young man to proclaim his truth and his love for his people and for the church. And that's what burns and lives inside of me today. Sometimes I'm a little awkward. Sometimes I'm very awkward, actually. I get to make mistakes and I get to learn along the way. But you guys, I need you guys to support me. I don't deserve to be... Thank you. I'm not here for power. I'm not here to be in control. I would be the last person who would want that. I would rather just stay behind the stage and hide behind the curtains and live my life.
Yes, you would.
But I'm called to sit right here. I'm called to sit right next to this man. Because this is what the church is supposed to be, guys. It doesn't mean you got to run around and hold hands and kiss each other, because that's not what we do.
Thank you.
Yeah. I just
now that
know
we
that.
Have that out of the way.
When God does something new and unusual, we attack it, and we start saying bad things, and we start believing lies about what it is. There's nothing fishy going on here. It's just two brothers caring and loving for each other the way they're supposed to. I would have never thought that's what it was supposed to look like for how selfish I was. But we're called to that kind of love, you guys. It's God is going to pull out so much in us through all this stuff. And as we learn what selfishness is and we learn what love is, because we're called to a greater love than the love you even know right now. Than the love you know with your spouse, than the love you know with your kids. There is something bigger that we don't even get. And God is love, and love is mysterious. So how can we even claim to know, think to know we know what love is? We don't have a clue what love is. And then God gives us little pictures throughout the way to see what it's supposed to look like. So Paul at the end here, in verses 13 and 14, says this to the Corinthians. Be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be courageous, be strong, do everything in love. The answer is love. Love roots out our selfishness. True, pure, unadulterated God's love. It pushes out selfishness. It pushes out sin. It gets rid of all this stuff for us. So God does crazy things like knitting two people together. And that's what he's done here. I never imagined that would happen in my life. Doug never imagined it, but it's here, and we're living it out, and it's awesome, and it's holy, and it is pure, and God is doing a lot of stuff with us personally, and then we sit in this position to be able to minister and to lead you guys and lay down our lives so you can see what God's doing in us so that you can go free and heal too. Because we are relationally sick as a community and as people, and we are way too selfish, and it needs to go. So God has called Doug and I to go first in this so that you guys can go next. He's uprooting our selfishness so your selfishness can be uprooted as well. And we can be the church we're called to be and stand up in everything that God has for us. I just think, if Jesus was selfish, where would we be today? If he wouldn't have went to that garden, if he wouldn't have went to the cross, if he wouldn't have laid his life down for us, where would we be? But he did do that, so why wouldn't we lay our lives down too? I've had to lay down everything to be knit to this man, and so has he. I do not have a life anymore. I don't. The life that I thought I wanted and dreamed for, I do not get because God has called me to this, and I have more life now than I ever thought I'd ever have.
Yep. So, I want to end this today by being really vulnerable with you. I can do that today. I can open my heart like this because you're sitting next to me. Because I've never been able to do this kind of thing before. So over the past 8 years, you guys have come to Valley Brook Church and you found a safe place. You found a place to get well. And for a lot of you, I was the first person who ever really saw you. I was the first person who ever really loved you. I'm the first person a lot of you ever told your story to. Things that you thought would never come out of your mouth. You've told those things to me. And I was trusted and I was safe for you. Whatever it took for you to get well, I fought for you. I prayed for you. I loved you the very best I knew how to do. I breathed permission into you. Whatever it was that God was asking you to do, I breathe permission into that. Whatever your God-created identity looked like, whatever that was, if God was in it, I was the one standing there cheering for you, giving you the courage to walk in it. And now it's my turn. I finally get to experience the Valley Brook Church that you've experienced and that you've known. I get to get well too. So God has given Nate to me to be to me what I've been to all of you. And over the years, I've had so many of you ask me, well, you're here for us. Who's there for you? And I had no answer. And that question used to make me so angry. But God had an answer. And it turns out that I love his answer. And I'm healing like crazy. I've healed more in the past year for more things. I mean, we're healing like crazy. This fall, I cannot wait to tell you. I can't wait for you to come to Thursday nights. I can't wait for you to walk into our fall series. There are things that I understand today that I have not been able to give you because I've been alone. And now I understand what relational healing looks like, and I get a whole bunch of stuff, and we get a whole bunch of stuff together. And because we've been sick on opposite ends of the spectrum, and God has brought us together and healed it, we get how it looks like for the entire community. Cannot wait to share this stuff with you. It's already changing our staff. It's already changing our overseers. Some of you that we've talked to individually, you're starting to understand what this looks like, and it's changing you, and it's changing wounded. I mean, it's going to change all of this because we understand. It's really amazing truth that we've learned out of the healing that we've experienced together. So here's what I need from you. Will you honor and respect my healing journey like I've honored and respected yours? Will you love me back like I've loved you? Will you see what God has done here and call it good? Because here's the truth. Being knit to Nate has been one of the best things God has ever done for me. Even though I really bucked it at first. My marriage has been healed in a big way. Robin is a huge fan of this.
Thanks, Robin.
I lead our staff. I relate to people on our staff, our overseer team, in a completely different way. I'm actually part of the team. I'm actually part of relationship. People can come close that were never able to become close before. And all I've been able to offer you, I can offer you so much more now, and it's so much more trustworthy because there's someone else in the picture who brings these parts that I've been missing. So that's amazing, all the things we get to share together coming this fall. It's really going to change the relational life of this church. But here's what I have to ask you this morning. Even if I didn't have any more for you because of this, would you still support me in my healing? Because that would be the selfless thing to do. I don't know why it's Nate. I just know it's Nate. And I just know all this broken junk inside of me is finally getting healed. And it feels amazing, and it feels amazing to not do this alone anymore. Just like Paul finally had a son in Timothy, I have a brother in Nate. It means the world to me to see you guys stand up and love me like that this morning. Thank you. So we're going to end today a little different. Grant, go up there, because here's the thing. We just need to sit here for a minute. I know God wants to begin to heal the selfishness in this church. I know that we had to share what we had to share this morning because it's supposed to flow into this community. And so for just a minute, Grant's going to play on the keys, and I want you to ask God, okay, where is it, God? Where am I selfish? What is it that you want to do in me? I know not, God's not going to knit you, but your heart to another person like he's done here. This is super unusual. You don't even have to be afraid of that. Really. That's not on the table for you. But here's what is on the table. To look at your relationships with God. Your relationship with people in your life, your relationship with this church, your relationship to money, your relationship to time, your relationship to all these things in your life. Okay, God, show me. I want the selfishness to go. Because this gets to be the seedbed for change. Today gets to be the seedbed for change in this community. That we can really love each other like we're called to. That our marriages can heal. That our relationships between our kids and our parents can heal. That our relationships with family members and friends can heal. There's so much healing in this. We want that for you this morning. So let's just take a few minutes and pray. Just quietly, silently, let's reflect. We'll sit here with you and pray, and then Grant's going to have us stand and lead us in our last song.